Welcome to the Everyman Sports Podcast, the show for fans, by fans. No former pros, no so-called experts, just real passionate fans. From outside on a porch to inside a living room, in the parking lot of a stadium to the dining room table, friends and families chat about their teams, their games, and what makes them cheer. This is Everyman Sports.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Everyman Sports. My name is Chad. I'm the owner-operator of this podcast. Today I am on the road driving and, it's been a while since I recorded and I thought it'd be a good time to talk about the world of sports and especially a busy, busy world of sports that's been going on. When last we left you, we were in the parking lot of Citi Field for the opening day of Citi Field, the New York Mets, who then went on to go on a 10-game homestand sweep, and it culminated in an 11-game winning streak, which, as a Mets fan, gave me and so many others some very, very high hopes. Unfortunately, now that April came to a close and May began, the Mets, who at the time and for a long stretch there had the best record in baseball, have come back down to earth and quite hard. They're actually still atop the National League East for the moment, but as baseball, it's a long season, so we'll see where it goes. But the pitching has really been the whole reason for that. Familia coming in after. I forget his name. Familia coming in to take over the closer role over Mejia, who's still suspended. But Familia's got, at this point, 11 saves, which is almost, I think, if not top, then close. He's in the leaders of saves this season. And Matt Harvey's been pitching wonderfully. Bartolo Colon was the first, I believe, 4-0 pitcher this season. And just really solid contributions through the pitching staff and the bullpen as well. And the offense just needs to kick it up, which, I know they're not going to be a great offensive team, but what they can do is, have timely hitting and just play strong defense. But that shortstop position between Wilmer Flores and, when Tejada's got the better glove, but Flores... I'm starting to wonder if his bat is worth his glove in the field. David Wright coming back soon enough should help them as well. The loss of Travis d'Arnaud, I think, is hurting them offensively because he was coming through really well. Anthony Recker is great off the bench or in spot starts. However, there's a reason why he's not a starting major league catcher. Also in the world of sports as well was the NFL draft. The NFL draft just happened a little bit over a week ago from this recording. Less than a week ago. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers took Jameis Winston, which I think it's a good pick. Last year, I had thought that Johnny Manziel should have gone to one of the Texas teams, either Houston or Dallas, because it's hard to say that he would perform better in those places, but Cleveland is a world outside for Johnny Manziel, for Johnny Football. Being from Texas A&M, living in Texas and being, from the area, I think he would have done much better on either Dallas or Houston. Maybe not on the field. He definitely would not have been on the field. I think that's the problem. Unless it's a guaranteed, a lock NFL player such as Andrew Luck was, Russell Westbrook has been, even though he wasn't one we thought out of college and out of the draft that he would start right away. But he has been able to. He's in his first two seasons, he's gone to the Super Bowl back-to-back seasons. And he's won. He won it in his first year. So, that just goes to show you that he has the ability, and he can. I shouldn't say that he went in his rookie year. He was not a starter in the Super Bowl his rookie season. But the point being is that unless it's Andrew Luck or him or others that you can name, Johnny Manziel would not have been starting for the Cowboys. He might have started for the Texans. He might have, but he just needed more time on the bench. And I think something like Jameis Winston, he's going to start. And he does have ability, wouldn't call him a guarantee to be an NFL starter, but he's going to start right away. And I think being in Florida, not that far away in Tampa from where Florida State was, but I think that's going to help him. Being in state, you know, he knows the people. He knows. I think it's going to be much more comfortable for him off the field. So when he gets on the field, I think it might help him. On the flip side, Marcus Mariota going to the Titans, who didn't trade their number two draft pick, their spot on the draft board, which was very surprising. I thought they were, and I really think they should have. Or at least I don't think they should have taken Marcus Mariota. Yes, Marcus Mariota was the second best quarterback, if not the first best quarterback, in this draft. But there's just something about the system he's going into. He would have been absolutely perfect for the Eagles. I use the analogy that he's basically a veteran who's a free agent, and he works best with a coach he's worked with before, a coach that he knows the playbook well. You know, the same way if you were to get hired by an old boss at a new company, like, hey, we used to work together, I trust this guy, I know this guy, he does really well, we have a good, you know, connection with each other, we mesh well, we work really well with each other, let's hire him. That's what I think he should have done with the Eagles. He should have gone to the Eagles. I'm not saying that the Titans, I'm just thinking that it would have worked out best if Mariota had gone to the Eagles. And then there were reports, rumors, that Andy Reid, the head coach of the Chiefs, who was the former head coach of the Eagles prior to Chip Kelly, had told the Titans, or, you know, let them know, basically as a way to get back, say, it's not worth it, these players aren't worth it, don't trade, trust me, don't trade your number two draft pick to my old team, the Eagles. There's a rumor that that happened. It's not substantiated. It's not seen as factual, but it's an interesting rumor to think that, you know, Andy Reid had a play in this. And then the Jets at number six drafted Leonard Williams. He's a really good lineman. He's pretty much going to, it seems like he's going to start right away. I personally, as a Jet fan, would have looked for a more splashier choice. Something on the offense. I understand that the offensive linemen were not as strong this year, at least not as strong as somebody like Leonard Williams. I also would have liked Todd Gurley or Gordon out of Wisconsin, who they went later on in the draft. And I think that they needed, their defense is good. They've got a defensive-minded coach. But I think having a strong running back like Gurley or Gordon would have helped them and helped Geno. They've got at least two good wide receivers right now in Marshall and Decker. They picked up another wide receiver, which, okay, so now that's three wide receivers. All right, that's good. And their running back, Chris Ivory's a good running back. I don't know. I would have liked one of these young running backs, because they're going to perform. They're going to perform right out of the gate, I believe, Gordon and Gurley. I'd actually say that those would be two to watch for fantasy drafts. I might even take a look at them myself when I'm doing the fantasy football this year. A couple draft picks that were of note, and I'll give the Cowboys credit for not going after one of those running backs, because, look, as I say, they're probably going to start, and they're going to contribute right away. But it would have been a little bit knee-jerk, and I think after the last couple drafts, especially with Zach Thomas, not Zach Thomas, that's the linebacker, but the lineman from Notre Dame that the Cowboys picked last year, and now he was a Pro Bowler last year. I think that just goes to show that there's a plan. As crazy as Jerry Jones is, and as knee-jerky as he seems, and he's football's George Steinbrenner, he's still competent enough to know what he needs. And he picked up, they picked up a guy in defense, and that's where they needed the most help. Their offense is fine. You know, yes, they lost to Marco Murray, but maybe McFadden can fit. If you've got a strong enough offensive line, it doesn't really matter who's back there. You just need somebody who's got talent. You know, Darren McFadden, he has not lived up to his potential, but there's something there, and I think they could use that. The Indianapolis Colts pick up a wide receiver, a very good wide receiver. But their defense is, it's bad. I'm going to come out and say it's bad. It's a bad defense. They needed to get better on defense. There were a lot of really good defensive players left on the board when they picked at the 30th pick. They could have taken a defensive player who could have been a difference maker on that side of the ball. They chose to go with another wide receiver. Don't forget, this team has T.Y. Hilton. They have an older Reggie Wayne. They've got two very... Dwight Allen, one of the tight ends, and another tight end who I cannot remember off the top of my head. There's another wide receiver as well. How many games are the Colts expecting to win via shootout? Look, all it takes is one good defense to stop an offense. That's all you need is one. And I'm not just talking about the regular season, the playoffs. Look at how Luck has performed in these last couple playoffs and the playoff games. It's not that he has been, they haven't been shootouts. He hasn't been beaten by another quarterback who's just thrown the ball and they have a combined score of over 150 or 200. They've been beaten on defense. When they lose, it's been decidedly, lopsidedly bad. They needed to build up their defense. Picking a wide receiver, as good as that wide receiver can be, I think was not worth picking it up there. There are plenty other wide receivers on your team. And you could have gone for a defensive player who could have started right away, contributed, and made a difference, where then those lopsided wins might be on your side and Luck's side in the playoffs. But that's not me. So those were just some of note, those draft picks. There were others as well. It was an overall good draft. I personally didn't like it in Chicago. It seemed a little flat. And then that weird, like, it was in the theater, but it was on that outdoor stage, and that's where they had, I guess they were trying to, because in the past, when it's been at Radio City Music Hall in New York City, they would have all of the telephones and all those ones who make the picks there, and then write it on a note and hand it in, and the commish says the name. Those are in the front, like almost in the pit, with the orchestra pit, and then all the fans are back there. So what they did was, in Chicago, they had an outdoor venue, covered outdoor venue, and they had those operators, those telephone guys, those desks being manned, and they got the helmets and the flags and all that stuff, and they write the note. And then I guess they send it electronically over to the theater, and I guess they wanted to get more people into the theater. It's not Radio City Music Hall, but it's a big theater. And that's where they had the draft picks and the green room, and they had all of that stuff. I don't know. I didn't like it to have it in so many different places. Like, that doesn't make it as strong. It's very weird, and I don't think it worked out well. But never you fear, because they're not going to be in Chicago next year. They're not going to even be in New York. They're going to send it out on the road. It's going to be like the All-Star Game and the Super Bowl. Find someplace else to do it. You know, whoever puts up the highest bidder, wherever they want to go. For all we know, next year it's going to be in California, maybe to try and get, you know, more people to support the possibility that a team could come back to the Los Angeles area. Who knows? We'll see. Moving on, the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs have been going very strong. The first round is over for both. And the NHL, the Islanders made it to Game 7. They won their last game in Nassau Coliseum. And I think that it's interesting that the end of it, the last few seconds of the game will be remembered, and actually the end of the game, of Game 6, the last game at Nassau Coliseum, will be remembered for a bit of a skirmish. Not a full-on fight, not a brawl, but quite a lot, and quite a lot of pushing, a couple punches thrown, but nothing out of hand, but just, I don't know, something about that. It was just really interesting that that was how it ended, I thought. But they lost Game 7 to the Capitals. Now the Capitals are playing the Rangers. Currently the Rangers are down 2-1 to the Capitals. How great would it have been to have seen the Islanders and the Rangers one last time, possibly one last time at Nassau Coliseum? You know, I don't think Islanders fans can't chant 1940 anymore. But, you know, it just, they hate each other. It would have been really nice to see. And then recently there were photos going around on the internet of them breaking down the ice at Nassau Coliseum and all that stuff. I guess they're saving some of the ice, you know, as they do, you know, they do with dirt or grass from a stadium that's no longer used or floorboards from an old arena. But I guess they're doing that with ice. I don't know how they're going to do that, but we'll see. And then... yes, I like the Rangers to go pretty far now that the Islanders are out. I'd like to see the Rangers go far. The Red Wings are out of the playoffs. I know they have had 24 straight Stanley Cup playoff appearances. I just think it's they lost the Tampa Bay Lightning. Hey, Tampa Bay's better than we thought, I guess. But we'll see. And I don't know, I'd still like to see... You know, Anaheim, those Southern California hockey teams are very strong now. And Anaheim has a very good chance of making it to the Stanley Cup. I don't know if I'd want to see New York, L.A. again. You know, even though it's not the Kings, it's the Ducks. It'd be Ducks Rangers. Honestly, I'd love to see something like Calgary, like the Flames. I always think that's great to see them there. But we'll see. They're still... Still a while ago for that. And then the NBA, first round's over. The Clippers forcing a Game 7 against the Spurs. And then they win on a last-second off-balance shot by an injured Chris Paul, who was grabbing at his hamstrings all game. That was a great performance, a great game. And I think that's something to behold. I would love to see the Clippers make it to the finals. A year after... the whole owner thing, you know, Steve Ballmer's their owner, and, you know, all that stuff they had to go through. Because they came in and they basically said, hey, if this, I honestly forget, that's funny how that's how news stories go. You forget about half the information after you are so intense about it and it's constantly bombarding your news feed and whatnot. But yeah, so, you know, after the old owner got in hot water over his recording by his mistress. You know, Doc Rivers and so many players were like, you know, we're not going back if he's still our owner. So they had to get him out of there. And Steve Ballmer comes in, the Microsoft executive, and away they go. And here they are. You know, they made it out of the first round. Really, the Spurs and the Clippers should not have been facing each other in the first round. Just the fact that it was that intense and that close... really makes it, that should have been a second round series. You know, the Warriors, they look to be the strongest team. They really do. Not just in the West, but in all of NBA, all of the NBA. Stephen Curry was given the MVP, rightfully so. I mean, they have just been something else. I foresee, you know, I'd love to see the Clippers, but it's probably going to be the Warriors in the finals. And over in the East, you know, it's... I feel so bad for Cleveland. I really do. Here they get, you know, LeBron comes back. They get all these pieces, and Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving is there. All this stuff is happening for them. Kevin Love goes down. Separated shoulder. He has to have surgery. He's done for the NBA playoffs. He's done. And Irving was injured here and there. I think he was out at least one game. So it's all on James, And, you know, Cleveland can't catch a break, which is very unfortunate. It really is. Who doesn't want to see them win? Who doesn't want to see them succeed and do really well? So, you know, I'd like to see Cleveland. Atlanta, they're strong. Number one seed. Be really interesting to see them in the finals versus Golden State. I honestly don't know how many people. That's not going to captivate the nation's attention. If the NBA, look, I'm not saying that the NBA does or should throw these games or, you know, have it follow what they want. But what would be perfect, you got LeBron, you got the Cavaliers in, beat up, down, and either face the incredibly strong Golden State or another really interesting, great backstory with the Clippers. You know, it's only the second round. We still got at least two more rounds to go. So we'll see how that works out to go. Back to baseball for a minute. They've got the couple of the things. The All-Star voting is up. So I always like to vote those in. Those are always great to do. And then they're running a thing, the Franchise Four. You know, you've heard, I think I've mentioned it, you know, they talk about how the Mount Rushmore of certain teams, players that go on that Mount Rushmore for that particular franchise. And I'm very happy to see that the Yankees, there really is, they have their core four, or I'm sure they have their franchise four. They just need it to be, you know, finalized and actually identified, you know, having, because it's really, it's Ruth, DiMaggio, Mantle, and Gehrig. You know, and I was very happy I saw that they're currently sending out sort of the leaders, because this is the last week for voting for the Franchise Four. And they have, you know, and the leaders are Ruth, Gehrig, Mantle, and DiMaggio. And, you know, Jeter and Mariano, as in Yankee lore, as great as they are not the top four players in franchise history. I'm sorry, they're not. They're not better. Neither of them is better than Ruth, obviously. Neither of them is better than Mantle, obviously. You want to give an argument for Gehrig? You're not going to get it, because Gehrig, he was the bridge between Ruth and DiMaggio. He's got the most Grand Slams in the history of the game. He won MVPs, you know, and of course DiMaggio. 56 game hitting streak. Jolton Joe, the man had songs written about him. He has cultural impact that neither Rivera nor Jeter have. They just don't. And so I'm very happy that they're not getting recognized for that, because the four who should be recognized are getting recognized. You want to ask the question, who's the fifth greatest Yankee of all time? I will give you that argument. I will say Rivera. He's the fifth greatest Yankee. If this was the Franchise Five, Rivera belongs in there. But it's the Franchise Four. It's the Mount Rushmore. For the Mets, I've put, I'll say it again, it's Seaver, Piazza, Strawberry, and Gooden. I haven't gotten an update on those four, or if that's the case, but I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be. Seaver and Piazza are locks. They really, really are. And I do believe that Strawberry and Gooden should be there as well. I don't know about the other franchises. Those are the two that have popped up to me, but we'll see. So, yeah, so thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Everyman Sports. You can find us on Twitter. We tweet, every day. Just something to send out there. And we've sent that out. Oh, before I forget, as I record this, the NFL has finally released their findings of Deflategate. And it turns out that Yes, in fact, there's some culpability with not only the Patriots, but also Tom Brady. Although the wording of it was very, very light. Basically saying he knew, but he could not have known that much. I don't think that's true, Tom. I don't think that's true, NFL. I think you're trying to protect something. You're trying to not make your Super Bowl winning team look horrendous and look, you know, suspicious. So you're trying something, you know. You release this after the draft, so you can't take any of the draft picks away. So what it's probably going to be is they're probably, Brady's not going to lose any games because they really treated him like, oh, he might have known incidentally. Whatever that means, but I don't think that's true in the least. He knew. You know, and then there are also reports that the equipment guy wanted, in exchange for the favor of deflating the balls a certain amount, wanted sneakers and other benefits, cash, and all that sort of stuff. So he knew. You know, Tom Brady knew. Other people knew. Robert Kraft coming out and saying that, you know, there's no substantial facts in this. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, they're just going to be fined a lot of money. They're not going to lose draft picks. If they do, that'd be wonderful. If there was suspensions, that would be even better. But let's be honest. They're just going to be given, you know, a fine. $100,000. Maybe in the millions. I don't know. But, you know, I'm just happy that I can at least take right now a small victory in the fact that they found something on the Patriots. Because, really, first of all, people forgot about this until recently when they visited the White House and Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, made mention, a joke of it, an off-the-cuff joke. And I went, oh, right, that's right. And, okay, here we release the findings. But people forgot, and now it's lightened. And so now they can give, you know, a light penalty. Slap on the wrist. So that's currently in the news. But yeah, so we tweet every day. You can find us at Everyman Sports on Twitter, Everyman Sports. And yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Andrew, please, take it away.
This has been another episode of Everyman Sports. The show's music is Cold Funk by Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under CC Attribution 3.0. Everyman Sports can be found on Facebook.com, where you can like it to receive updates and news. Visit Everyman Sports in the iTunes Store to leave a review of the show. Also, visit everymansports.podbean.com directly to comment and support. Everyman Sports can be contacted directly at everymansports@gmail.com.